What such, got my, what lovely veneers you've got. And fangs. That doubles as the fong, actually. Thank you for joining the madness. We have got Jamie Boyle, we have got Alex Reed, we have got Jen, and we're in Middlesbrough.
I've never worn a Jamie Boyle, Sean Atwood face
mask.
Would
you like to wear a Sean Atwood face mask?
I'd rather wear it as a thong bikini.
We're talking. Yeah.
We're going to have a bottle of wine and you've, yeah, what did you think of Middlesbrough when you had a look about
it? I actually really liked it. I thought it was friendly. And you actually said to me...
Middlesbrough and friendlies. Do you know what? People are warm and friendly up here.
I really feel... it's clean. Mm. It seemed actually quite debonair, swish. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, do you know what, Sean? You said it was like a different environment. When I go down, spend time in Whitechapel and all that, it's a million mile an hour. And it's like going to a different planet. Do you find that up here?
From the south, the hive energy of London, the vibrations that get you all like zzzzed up to the relaxed pace of northern cities and towns. It's a massive frequency shift, isn't it?
You say relaxed, but we're not. We literally went out around, what time was it, about half six. I imagine it would be a bit more vibrant at about 9 o'clock at night. Because, you were telling me it was quite rough. And we were outside the club. What was the club called?
The Bongo.
Bongo.
And that was quite a violent club, apparently.
That was the only door back in Lee Duffy's generation era, if you like. That was the only door that actually stood up to
Lee,
Duffy.
Who's Lee Duffy? I obviously know, but I'm sure there's a lot of people the Robin Hood of...
He was, the craze of Bethnal Green, Paul Sykes, Wakefield, Viv Grimm, Newcastle, and kind of... In Middlesbrough, certainly for a true crime element, it's Lee Duffy. There's no one really else. Saying that, I've just discovered a link that there was a potential Jack the Ripper suspect from Middlesbrough for this new book. But ultimately, when people... I mean, I've had messages these last couple of months. Peter Lee, Western Supermare, people driving up just to go to Lee's grave and see where it all happened. But, the Bongo door was a very rough place in Middlesbrough and everything happened there.
What about now?
So we did a lovely live there, didn't we?
Yes, and we're going to be doing a second one with the Paul Sykes one. But,
is it a violent door now?
It's died. It's
it didn't look like it was open, yeah.
Yeah, it finished a couple of years back.
Was it a violent door then?
Yes, it was. I mean, the owner, Abdullahi, died only a couple of years back. And he was 104. And he was still working on that door, like running it. Certainly to probably about 96, 97.
104.
And back in that time, he used to carry a knife specifically for Lee Duffy. So he was, he was one of the only one in Teesside that said, I don't give a fuck who you are. You have to pay near you and you've got to behave. And it's a lot. Lots of things have happened on that Bongo
door. It doesn't really inspire me to go there. It's like that.
So, from a tourist point of view, why would you advise people to come to Middlesbrough?
do you know what? It's Middlesbrough first and foremost.
Started off so well.
Yeah. Do you know what? Captain Cook put Middlesbrough on the map. Captain Cook. He discovered Australia.
At Middlesbrough.
And then essentially he moved as far away as he could and then he come back and he emigrated to Whitechapel, Marlin Road. But he kind of, he was the first one in Middlesbrough that people are naming the hospitals after. Chris Rea, Bob and Bob Mortimer, Chubby Brown, Chris Kamara, Jenny South, Amelia Lilly, Brian Clough. But of course, on a true crime element, it's Lee Duffy. And lots of your followers, Sean, will be very familiar with Middlesbrough, South Bank in general. And that was Duffy, who was a young kid. And you know what? Paul Daniels come from South Bank. But a lot of people are aware of South Bank because of this young kid who walked about in shorts and a vest and ultimately left this kind of legacy, for good or bad, I don't know, but people are just obsessed.
What was the Battle of the Bongo?
So the Battle of the Bongo, I think, Paddy Maloney spoke of it in the Hall of the Moon documentary, and that was basically Duffy and a couple of his mates, I won't name, all tried getting in. And Paddy was there this particular night and seen everything go on. And it ended with loads of people hospitalised and hammers about. And it was just, you know, and it was spoken of. And even when Lee Duffy died, you know, all these people, the 92, 93 court cases, that all started because Lee went in the bongo, tried to get in. Abdullah said, you can't. And, you know, this kind of him and them, and obviously lots of Duffy's mates, and there was this kind of battle for a couple of years, but no one got on the bongo door unless you paid in, unless old Abdullah liked you.
It was nicely reinforced, wasn't it?
But what's it like? Look, that was then. What's it like now? I mean, it looked like quite a nice place to come down. I was quite impressed.
Do you know what?
You're painting not a very nice image of it.
Middlesbrough, like, the town, obviously, the councillor. They've invested.
You agree?
They've invested a lot of money over the last couple of years, trying to make Middlesbrough a nicer place. Millions has been spent, and it's a nice on the eye, but there's certain patches, you know, like over the border, which is where the bongo was.
What does this mean, the border? The border of what? Because people put in the comments, back in the day you wouldn't be filming on the border like that.
Yeah, so over the border it was the train tracks. So if you were classed as on that other... So the area is called...
Postcode wars, like in London.
Yeah, sort of, but the
knives?
Area... No.
Guns? I mean,
not like that. But the area was called St Hilda's, and it's been very much like... Paul Venice's area, South Bank. They're flattening a lot of things, but the money's not going back into it. So it's, you know, what the things are in the area, just things like charity shops and, you know, it's not really, 30 years ago, South Bank had its own train, it had its own shop, football stadium, it had nightclubs, it had everything. And people didn't even need to go and travel in the centre of Middlesbrough because everything was in the centre, was in South Bank.
We've got that lovely bridge that we talked about.
Yeah, the Transporter Bridge, which is it's very iconic, and it's probably the first thing you think of in Middlesbrough. I know Paul Sykes put in his book, Sweet Agony, he said, when I got to Middlesbrough, I thought, what a fucking dump. He said, the place filled me with dread. And he said, when I spent a week here with John Spenceley, he said, you know what, it was the best week of my life. He said, Middlesbrough, it's just, there's everything going on. For different kinds of environments, your baddies, your goodies. You know, it's got a huge university thing at the minute. So there's people from Ireland going up to Middlesbrough, and it has got a lot better. But you know, it has had its bad cases of drugs and particularly prostitution. You know, a lot of people were coming up and getting caught from Newcastle, Sheffield. They were all getting caught kerb crawling because Middlesbrough had the cheapest heroin and the cheapest prostitutes in Great Britain. So that's why you were seeing a lot of people. But it does have its knockers, Middlesbrough. But it's an interesting place, Sean. For you and what you do, there's been so many characters come out of the town of Middlesbrough. Obviously, you know, your first one is your Lee Duffy, but there's been a lot of other ones, and you think, and it was just normal to, you know, to have this kind of social tool and think, right, I'm going to have a fight or I'm going to sell drugs. You know, people were kind of, certain parts of Middlesbrough were dragged up, and that's all they knew. So they didn't have this social tool of saying, you know what, lads, I don't want to fight tonight. It was just have a fight and think about what later. And that's a lot of people's outlook in Middlesbrough. It was just violence is a normal thing. You know, it's not as bad as it was years ago. But obviously, you know, with the Lee Duffy thing, and I've done a few of the other books from around the local area, and there's a lot of limelight come from, and I'm convinced I'm convinced in the next couple of years there will be someone come along and do a lead off with film. I get messages all the time, and there's people just obsessed with just want to, oh, tell me so-and-so. I spoke to a guy not long back, and he messaged me. I won't mention him, but he's got millions of followers. And he said, oh, I just want to talk about, I fell down the Lee Duffy rabbit hole. So he wanted to talk to me and all. And the wife said, do you know who that is? And I was like, no. And this is a guy, famous, millionaire, but just wanted to talk about Lee Duffy. And that's, you know, there's so many people being like that the last couple of years. I've met people and boxers and footballers and, oh, isn't that where so-and-so? You know, it's the same with the Paul Sykes thing as well. That's going to obviously take off when the film and documentary happens.
So you say Lee Duffy put Middlesbrough on the map?
Oh, God, this, you know...
if you're going to be a talk...
To be honest, Chris Rea,
right.
Brian Clough, I'm doing a book on him next year. He was the greatest ever manager. To give you an example, he was voted the third greatest manager of all time by ESPN. He was like Jose Mourinho 40 years ago. Massive personality, charismatic, very, very quirky guy, but everyone knew him in the world. Chris Rea, he driving home for Christmas, and that, he grew up in Groveville. So Brian Clough and Chris Rea come from the same area. You know, obviously Duffy was South Bank, but your other people like Bob Mortimer, I don't know, there's been famous people over the years, and, you know, it was Middlesbrough, it gets a lot of
bad
light.
I believe it's about 250 years old, I think you told me.
Did you Google it?
Do you know what?
No, I asked, how long has Middlesbrough been Middlesbrough? You said it started at a farm of about 25 people.
It started at a farm at the back end of the 1700s, and 25 people, and I'm not sure whether...
How many now?
The population of Middlesbrough these days is 149,000, but greater Teesside, like your Stokesleys, your Great Ayrtons, Stockton, 376,000. So it is quite a big place. And in that number, most people are aware of Billy Duffy's and all
and
that.
Tomorrow, what I was impressed with, you've got a good football stadium and you're playing Chelsea.
Right? Middlesbrough are playing Chelsea.
So you're quite up
and
there.
Do you know what? They're favourites because Chelsea have got no fans allowed in. And people are thinking, oh, well, hang on, Chelsea should beat Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough have just knocked out Man United and Tottenham back-to-back in the FA Cup. So, Chelsea, you've got no fans. And I sounded like that guy there, didn't I? You've got no fans. So that's who Middlesbrough are playing tomorrow. It's on telly, FA Cup. And the stadium holds about 34,000.
I'm not a football fan. Are you football fans?
Yeah, Sean's massive.
I was never a jock.
I can't say I've even watched a football game. I mean, I've watched England.
Have you not watched one? Yeah. Well, you know when it's in the World Cup, you've got to watch England, yeah.
100%. Yeah. I played for Man City.
Did you?
In Hollyoaks. Can't keep the ball to save my life. Oh, my God. I must say, why couldn't they make me a fighter or something? They made me a England's top striker. And I said, you're never going to have to kick a ball. So I was training to do kippy-uppies like every day for about 6 months, an hour a day. And they said, you're never going to need to kick a ball. So I stopped training. And then 6 months later, they said, my last final show, I had to score the winning goal.
Did you?
For England against Greece. And I went, oh, my God. I toe-punted it. I asked all the extras, and they're all good footballers. Look, you can make me look like an arsehole, or I can buy you all a drink, and we can go home early. And they made me look good, thank goodness. But I still look like an arsehole.
Because, do you know what, Alex? People... I'm not going to go there, but people are aware of...
But you're going to go there.
No, I'm not going to. So that's...
if you're going to promote me like you're going to promote Middlesbrough, stop!
No, but what I was going to say is, right...
Jesus!
Do you know what gets forget with Alex Reid, right, is he was famous in his own right until 2009. Obviously, he become to the limelight. But do you know what? I mean, you know what? You're in Hollyoaks, you had military background... You were in
Gladiator. Look at this. Look what I'm wearing. Uncommon soldier.
Yeah.
Don't follow the crowd.
Paratrooper, baby. But saying that, I say that with what's going on in the world at the moment. It's funny. I'm a member of many different groups, and I'm like, I'm anti-war. I don't believe in war.
But do you know what? What I'm saying is, you've had all these fights over the world, acting, military background. all these kind of different things. But obviously, you've become. Can I ask you something? How do you deal with negativity when?
And trolls.
Sean gets it because everyone hates you. It's just in the small print, right?
Yeah, even I do.
Yeah, you're going to get it because
just before we started this, we were just talking about you actually cried.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
That was
we don't want to say it because don't want to encourage trolls.
Me. You know, can you remember last time we did our Liverpool trip?
Yeah.
And I had that really nasty comment put on.
Oh, yeah, because you were just getting broken into the troll world, weren't you, around there?
Yeah, and I was in, yeah. I was staying in his parents' outhouse. Mm. He could tell something was
outhouse?
Up. Whatever it is. Granny attic. What do you call it?
Garage that was
now
changed
a bedroom.
Into a bedroom.
It's, my parents' it's beautiful. Garage. But no, and I got back there and I was just bursting tears. And you come in and you sat with me and just said, you know, obviously, it'll be alright, basically.
How you know?
It will get easier. It don't bother me. I don't read the fucking comments.
Oh, yeah, no. That's the best way.
No.
Russell Brand said, he's massively fit, and he said, just don't look at it.
Well, it was interesting, actually, because I watched a podcast recently where Ricky Gervais said, the bigger you get,
yeah.
So the part of people who like you will go up.
Show me a man who's got no haters, and I'll show you he's got no success.
Exactly.
Now, do you know what, Sean? Alex was famous in his own right, fighter, model, all these kind of things, right? And then when he kind of, when everyone in the world and people's nanas knew he was, right? How was it, Alex, right, when you wake up, right, and you've gone from being small time to news reporters hanging outside your house, just, and it, how is it, right, when you're in the front of the news of the world and everyone hates you? How do you cope with that level of millions?
Not everyone hates you, but I mean, there is a point where you get 999 great comments and you get one comment and you concentrate on the bad comment. Yeah. That's human nature. And it takes a while of... I mean, I do read comments. Not all the time. I don't look for them, but if I'm... I'd look at them now because I like to say they have no power. They still do have power. Someone said something nasty yesterday. I'm like, do you know what? You have to check yourself. If you continually put your hand into a pot of nasty comments, you're going to pull out. It's going to stick. So I'm not doing that all the time. But sometimes, look, if you're a brand and you want brand awareness, you want to kind of see how the brand is from time to time. So I poke my head in. But I take now a more mature. It's less affected. I mean, I'm not.
Because
really...
when you first got your first negative story in the papers, how did that make you feel? Can you remember?
So you were 34 then.
And the first one that made you feel?
Well, I mean, I was bullied at school. And in my fight game, there's always bullying, isn't there? Like, you're crap, you can't fight. There's a bit of that. But it's not like on the scale I had in the mass media. I mean, I'd walk past the building site and I'd get, like, jeered at. And I'd want to fight everybody because I was scared. Ultimately, a scared little boy. And I proved I was tough by mixing with gangsters and tough guys and... did all those fights, and I'm like, ultimately, I didn't want that. I just wanted to, like, beat the bullies. Mm-hmm. And that's not great. And you can't fight everybody. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn quick. I mean, I did. So when you get a lot of abuse, and you have to evolve. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to... Well, do you tell me, Sean? You come into it a little bit older, maybe.
It's a minuscule fraction of the people putting negative comments up, of all the comments. So it's all love and respect coming all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
But this vocal, minuscule fraction...
Keyboard warrior.
...gets an undue amount of attention, you know, like you said. And we should be responding to all the love and support. I mean, we've been out... While we've been on the road the last week, we've been going out doing live streams in neighbourhoods, Talk Stuff Liverpool, just here tonight. People are watching us, seeing where we are, and coming out and saying hello, we watch your podcast, blah blah blah.
Got lifted in
Talk Stuff. We had some guy gave us a lift and everything.
So it seems to me like you maybe know the fable about the two wolves. You're feeding the good wolf, not the bad wolf.
Yes.
If you feed the bad wolf, you're gonna. Oh my God, I'm so shit. I wanna kill myself.
You know the bad wolf is a sign of success, so we should be flattered and honoured that these people are spending all that time, even though they're saying crap about us. They're obsessed. They're spending all that time thinking about us to put these comments up and making these videos.
in the days of the news of the world, right? I mean, you must remember, right? One day Beckham got it, Kerry Katona got it, Michael Barrymore got it, and I remember you used to get it. So how did you deal with it when even Elsie up the road the old Nana, who's 80, will still know who Alex Reid is, and she'll just believe because she's read the paper.
It gets to the point where there's so much of it, you can't, you just like, it goes over your head a little bit, but there's like, it's not nice. I mean, I do remember going into garages, petrol stations, when I was more prolific in the media world, in all those tacky magazines. And I'm in the queue to pay for my petrol, and somebody's got a magazine, and I'm on it, and I'm like, putting my hood up like this. Oh my god! And it's like something sensational, scandalous. It's embarrassing because you're like, it's not. And the worst one, I remember this. There's certain images you pick out in your life, and the sort of things that pop up. I remember walking into a club and some girls all sniggering and laughing at me, and that hurt me. I thought, bitches. I'm not like that, because there was at the time there was a lot of salacious media, and it's just stuff like I felt like, because I felt insecure, judge, jury, the next shoot before I'd even had a chance to.
Did you ever feel like sort of crawling into a hole, shutting your curtains for a week, staying in bed, depressant?
No, good. I wanted to fight it, and I did, and I did get depressions. I hit drugs a lot to escape. You know, and that's, I didn't realise, I thought I was happy. But really, it was. And when I didn't do drugs, I'd do fighting. It was all escapism. Martial arts, you know, putting myself in the most scary position in the world.
But, I mean, it's your bread and butter.
Stop the voices coming at you.
But it's your bread and butter, Sean, and the drama and the beef and all that. But does it ever get too much for you where you think, do you know what?
No, because in the beginning, you're new to it and you get some bad comments coming in and you freak out. And you're like, you have this emotional reaction. But then so much of it happens as a threshold, like Alex said, whereby your skin just thickens and you don't give a shit anymore. And then you realise this is actually a sign of success.
But do you not worry that your skin's going to get so thick that you are so numb to any emotion?
Because I tell you what, because you say
it
that.
It is thickening right in front of your eyes.
You say that. You had some real abuse recently, and I asked you.
That was years ago. That was a couple of years ago now.
There was something not that long ago. When was the last time I saw you? 6 months?
Yeah, six months.
And there was a bit of shit going on.
Oh, the podcast was.
And I was like, were laughing it, and you were loving it. I was like, really?
You missed it last week. One of the guys in the podcast was. And now it's on his Instagram. He was coming to my house to get me. I woke up with all these messages. He's on his way. So I just put a live stream up saying, I am waiting for you. But he never showed up. But to me now, it's a joke. Yeah. It's a joke.
I think you see the humorous side to it.
You say that. I do. But when you've got a family and there's scary people, I don't know how scary this person is, but it still doesn't matter.
He was an ex-hitman who'd been shot up multiple times.
It doesn't matter who they are. But that's a scary person. But you still, it doesn't matter if someone's psychopathic and they're threatening you. I take that seriously. And I mean, so this is the conversation I had with you back then. So you still got to take threats like that seriously.
I don't.
But I mean,
someone who's daft enough to go online and say he's coming to my house is not a credible threat.
But you'd have to, I mean, I don't know how it works with you because you're involved in the crime world. And not specifically, but it's your genre.
That we know of.
Yeah. But you can't be like, if someone's threatening me publicly, I've got a family. It's not about being a grass. You're threatening me publicly. What am I supposed to do? You have to go and tell the police or not?
No, I didn't. I just did a live stream and said, I'm waiting for you.
You tell he's a robot.
I didn't. If someone's going to seriously do something to you, you're going to come out of your house in the morning and they're going to come up behind you and put one in your head. They're not going to announce it on Instagram.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? Have you ever had a threat to your life? Yeah.
More than one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Elaborate.
And how did you handle that?
As sensitive as you can.
I don't mind saying. Recently, gone to the police. But before, I have had favours. And then the favours cost. And you end up in a shitty position. So I don't advise, you know. But what did the police do? Nothing. I mean, so I'm like, I often think about, I'm so anti-violence, but I'm also, there should be like, you should be able to protect yourself.
They can't really do anything until something's happened. It's like a catch-22, isn't it, with the police?
I know. And what I know, I've been in more than 60 court hearings in the last 10 years. It's not about what you know, it's about what you can prove. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm a good guy and I've got good people around me. And I have got very good people who are very powerful as well, who know how to do things. But it just don't, it's so careful. You have to be so careful because you don't want to get involved in any legal or illegal things. But when you're being threatened and your family's being threatened, it does make you think.
I definitely really understand.
I've had my nephews and my nieces threatened, and I've thought about going like proper military style, and I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing?
Then they've won, haven't they, after you get busted? And
yeah. But when you're. What do you do? Why am I here? Can we talk about that? What happened or not?
We
skirt around it.
Yeah, we'll skirt around that because it's been cancelled, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Jen's got stalkers through her internet stuff that she's been doing in recent months, haven't you, Jen?
Oh, yeah, they're brilliant. No, I'm joking. No, they're not stalkers. They're not turning up at my house.
But they're cyber stalking.
Yeah, cyber stalk, phone calls, we've had numbers, you name it. Dick pics, they're the best. Please stop sending dick pics. I mean it. They just get blocked. Honestly, it's disgusting. Why would a woman want to see a man's fucking penis?
It's quite a nice one.
Come on. I'm going to open it up and be like,
I've never ever sent a dick pic.
Have you never sent a dick pic?
I've probably sent one to him.
Oh, actually, you have.
I think I have. I sent him to Paul Venice as well.
But the thing is, what I don't understand is, you were just telling me when you got married, right? Yeah. You wore a kilt, and you wouldn't. Your missus made you. Oh shit!
Yeah, she was not
because she took the cat's out of the bag. Now, yeah, she sent me.
She knew people had been pulling my thingy, but
of course.
Do you know what? Like Alan Thompson, like some of my close friends, I'll ring up and just sit on the toilet like that. But do you know what? If that got out, I'd be dead. Some of the stuff.
Love that. You do what on the toilet?
No, I have my phone, Alan Thompson or Paul Venice or.
Yeah. Jen's like that. Call me back right now. I'm like, I'm taking a piss. She's like, call me. I'm taking a shit. Call me right now.
No, I'll message him. I'll be like, you need to ring me right now. He's like, I'm having a shit. Is what I'll get back? Is it a piss?
Still call me right now. Like, I'll turn the water on so she can't even hear my bum drop. Jen, what is the problem?
Right, I ring my girlfriends while I'm in a wee. Yeah, it's really normal. If I'm halfway through a conversation, I need a wee, I'll quickly go and I'll still be on the phone.
But I'm doing YouTube then Zooms. The camera goes off and then you hear them. What's that? Are you on a toilet? No. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Can we delete? I forgot this camera.
That's not good.
It was Jamie brought the toilet up and got
us. No, it is, but you know, it's like, that's because I'm familiar with people. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't just do it straight away.
You're not like on the phone to the bank.
No. I've been talking for 18 months, so do you know what I mean? Like, kind of. But no, do you know what? I remember when I knew of him before I didn't know, and I used to read all the things and think, I've Googled some of the stuff and think, do you know what? It's different with YouTube stuff, but what is it like when everyone in Great Britain has read the news of the world and everyone's got an opinion? Because that's another level. That's like millions of people.
That's what Alex went through.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, you think of some of the stuff like Kerry Katona's went through and all this, and it must...
You get worried for a bit and then you have to adapt. I think I'm 46 years young, so that was 35, 34... It was a long time ago.
You look at your Cavalan Flax.
Is that when it kicked off for you, when you were sort of in your mid-30s then?
Mm-hmm. What kicked off?
The degree of...
That celebrity-dom, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was...
I think the first picture was...
I said on your show when we did it, I call it it's like being on LSD. I wasn't taking LSD. Mm. I have taken LSD, so I know what that's like.
But it's a fame drug.
Out of this world, you're like, you can't... You spin a bit, yeah.
Does it get addictive when you're... Because you're mixing of all these different people. You're quite close to Geordie Marsh and all these kind of different people. And does it get addictive, like, to the cameras everywhere you go and then...
Yeah.
What was it like the first time you came across paparazzi?
I mean, he won Big Brother, right? He was 40 to 1 to win it.
Didn't know what paparazzi was.
Did he press himself?
Did he not?
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is fun. Look, I'm important.
Yeah. Like all them stuff.
And it's after a while, look at me.
Were you like posing?
No. If you're trying to like try and be cool, look at me, I'm trying to be cool. Mm. Blue Steel. I started to really look. I get told off by my missus all the time because I'm scruffy and I'll be in my ASOS tracksuit for the rest of the week, you know.
But did you ever get to the point?
I'd be in really smart clothes all the time now, you know.
Did you get to the point, right, where you thought, hang on a minute, this is good, and then all of a sudden you thought, shit, life was better when no one knew who you were? Life was easier?
No.
So you preferred being the famous guy?
I was off my face. Mm. I wasn't taking drugs. It was, how can you not be off your face?
Because we were in London.
I describe it to being literally high. Mm. Because life is so surreal. You can't comprehend. You're in all the newspapers. Mm-hmm. You're on television. You walk, everyone knows you. It is the weirdest sensation. It's kind of, and part of my ego misses that a little bit. But also, it actually loves the anonymity. Mm. Anonymity? Yeah. Is that anonymity?
We were walking up,
Pentonville
Road or something. And these two girls come up and they went, where do I know you from? Where do I know you from? Pointing to him. He went, because I'm sexy. but they were like, they knew him from somewhere. They were like, hang on a minute, you're famous, you were. They weren't asked about me. But then when we got to the pub, these people knew who Paul Sykes was, and they went, you're the author, do you remember? But even when we got to the pub, everyone knew who he was, and it's like, how would you deal with that? And, like, you know, listen, people knew who I, but everyone knew who he was 15.
I'm not that famous. I mean,
2009, 2010, infamous, when you were getting married, when you were winning Big Brother.
Yeah, then.
Yeah, everyone had an opinion of you, and it's,
So what I've tried to do purposely now, that was then, this is now. We'll talk about a lot about the past. Mm. I'd like to talk about now and what's going on. The future is, I have been diligently working away from celebrity. I'm not anti-celebrity, but it's been very negative for me. Mm-hmm. So I believe in myself, and what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Mm. That's what I'm working on now, and I'm working my acting and my charity work. Mm. I'm very positive about doing a lot of different things there. What about you guys?
What we want to do when we grow up?
What are you going to be when you're an adult?
Can you see you doing this forever, Sean?
I don't know, because I've gone from various things that are like way different from previous stock market, exit trafficking, author, YouTube. I have dramatic shifts that come unexpectedly.
What's your goals?
My goals? I don't have goals anymore, because when I was 20, it was like, I've got to be a millionaire by age 30. Got to do all this in the stock market and everything. Just wake up now and smile at the squirrels and throw them some monkey nuts and get on with the day and see what comes. But I'm just loving life.
Living now.
I'm happier now than I've ever been.
You are happy?
Yeah, yeah.
What about you, Jen?
Because I'm your co-host.
Totally, totally.
What about you, Jen?
I haven't thought that. I mean, I've got my company. But and that's always my baby.
Okay, yeah. What's your company?
Boomer Jen Clothing.
Boomer
Jen Organic Clothing. .co.uk.
And I like the clothes. I'm not wearing any now, but...
You have to bring a hoodie next time. But no, I don't know. I'm enjoying podcasting. It's exciting.
When you were a little girl?
I wanted to be an air hostess. That was a dream. And then I never did anything towards that. I've done so many different jobs. So, yeah, eclectic mix.
So why are you doing this now?
I don't know. You asked me, didn't you?
It's fun.
He asked me and I was like, yeah, I think I could do that. Thought I'd give it a go.
I kind of got
to the age where I thought, you know, give it a go, I'll never know. Single, I've got the time to
single?
Do it.
Oh, well, because that, because you've got
Because when you're in a
relationship, energy.
You know, when, I mean, we're away, been away seven... jealous of this hunk, come on. but, like, I've been away 7 days now, so, and it's going to go tonight. You couldn't do that if you were in a full boom.
Well,
you might be able to, but it might not. Go down too well.
Why did you choose Jen?
To fill Wildman's shoes, there was nobody like with that charisma and
who's
that
Wildman?
Wit.
You never got to meet him. He was.
I know. Who
he's
is
just
Wildman?
Doing it. He's playing for the cameras.
Do you know? Do you know what?
Because you were talking like earlier on about Lee Duffy. There's a lot of my people who watch this. Like, hey, what? Hey.
Do you know what? When you Google my name, what comes up is Wildman, and the reason is because we spoke about
Really?
The books. And I've had so many people message me and said, oh, no, I can't believe, well, but did you get enough footage? Did you get enough material? But that will just be a case of your family. Do you know what? Wildman, he was a total one-off, wasn't he? And a lot of people seen him at the end, this huge guy. But he wasn't always like that when he was as crazy. And the clue's in the name. He was literally barking, where he would just go missing in America for
days. But who is he? Who is he?
It was Sean's kind of childhood friend. But he would
and
just...
And what did he become?
He got into a...
Go on, Sean. It's Sean's childhood friend. Sean, who is my old man?
We became crime partners, let's put it that way.
And is he a gangster?
He opened the door into that world for me. So I was the brains and the money, and he was the brawn. And
were you scared?
When you're on crystal meth, GHB, Xanax, ketamine, and all these other drugs, you have false bravado. So if I wasn't on all those drugs, I would have been scared. But with him and being on them, it was like just an adventure.
Did you think you were a badass? Did you think like you were powerful?
My ego went as big as the Grand Canyon, but I was aware I didn't have the physicality to do what he was capable of doing.
Did you have like, I mean, was he your only like backup? So he was like the brawn, you were the brains.
So he opened the door into organisations that had our back.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you asked us, we've had a little bit of a talk, but I still find it interesting because I know you, I wouldn't mix around you if you weren't a nice person. Intrinsically, you're a nice person.
Thank you.
And you like attracts like. And I've been mixed in some scary positions and I'm like, oh, how the hell did I get out of that alive? Why am I here? What? This isn't what I'm about.
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago.
People tried to drag you into that because you were a fighter. I know the stories. And you had the good grace to think, hang on a minute, no, this is not for me. Because people saw him as this MMA guy, the London underworld figure, we could use him. And he knew a lot of them figures, but you had the sense to not...
Well, I did. I was involved with them for
a bit. Do people ever think, because you're so nice, because you are a nice guy, yeah, that you're a bit gullible?
Oh, of course they do. They do, yeah. I mean, I've had that so much of that. Mm. And I have been. Mm. I've done the most stupid things. I'm lucky to be alive. Yeah.
It's the only way to learn, though, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, I've certainly had... I sometimes crave for boredom. How would it be like to have a boring... Like, just... Please, can I just not have anything happen for a while?
Mm. Yeah. Do you find it's calmed down now?
Yeah, it's different now for me.
You've got obviously
now I'm a dad. I've been a dad for a long time. But I'm a dad again recently, and we're going again. So it's a whole new life.
I think your life's changed more in the last 12 months than it has ever.
Yeah.
From where you've been. Do you know what I mean?
It's like there was an article in OK.
Yeah, seen it.
Last week, and it was like, I was like, what the. On the article, it says Alex Reid could potentially have quadruplets. Quads. Like, what the?
That's come out of fresh air.
I was like, where does that come from? And it's potentially truth. I was like, because we're putting in two, we've got two embryos in the freezer. We're doing IVF, me and my partner Nicola. And they're very highly likely in IVF to split. Mm-hmm. More than any other. So, I mean, four, I just want one. I've already got one. Oh, I've got two. I've got a lovely little girl called
But
Dolly.
I think from now on, your future is, you've learned your lessons with the things you've been involved with, and now, as Alex has taught me quite a bit, he said, books, becoming an actor, not...
Becoming?
No, sorry.
Being an actor.
Yeah.
But like, but, 2019 was a bloody great year.
But there's a lot of things you were dragged in that you wouldn't allow yourself now.
Yeah.
You know. But he knows about being in depression, being in drugs, certain other things, and... Like I said, I've had my crap, Sean, you get it. But I could not imagine, right? I'm only kind of well-known in Teesside and the Bucks and maybe Wakefield. But I couldn't imagine waking up, being on the front of the news of the world like he has and Michael Barrymore and all them kind of... And you just, there's nowhere in the world you could go because everyone would, oh, God. And it's, you know, I know, used to talk to Colin Hart, who's a writer for The Sun, and I know the levels what they're sold and... Everyone, you go to the top of Inverness, someone would know you or know of him and have this opinion, oh, it's him. Do you know what I mean? And he's had that since 2009 when I first seen him come along tanned, stripped. The fair, if you Google him, that's, you know, and he's...
Jamie, I'm just to cut you off there. These are all your books. All your books you've made.
I can see Sean's hard time there.
Yeah, I've done
on Amazon.
So how many books you done?
20, but I've got another... So I've got Jack the Ripper finished this month, and I've got Hartlepool Born and Bred 2 yet to come out. I've got The Police Figure, who's been on your show, we're not going to name. So I've got three not finished. And I'm doing Michael Showers,
to be honest, though,
Nick Manners, and Johnny Ripper.
This one?
To be honest, though, the thing that was...
This one, Johnny Boy.
Oh. He's been on Sean's show, actually, one of the...
This is
Check out Arnold Thompson.
So from humble beginnings at Wall's End Boys Club and near Paralis in a car accident early in his career to scoring a winning goal at Celtic Park against the mighty Barcelona. Geordie Boy is the story of a true Glasgow Celtic and Bolton Wanderers icon. So for all the football fans?
Yeah.
See, I'm not a football fan, and I'm not, funny enough, a true crime fan. So that's why initially I was...
Get out!
I was put off.
Yeah. Through the door!
But I like you, and I'm like, so look, this is why I said... That has inspired me, you know.
But do you know what? Tyson Fury, it's like... In that book, if anyone... It's The Furious Method. He talks about... fighting life and getting up and going to the shops and not letting people out there on social media. It's kind of like it's a book on every aspect of life. And I thought, you know what? He read it in Pentonville Prison, which is where Oscar Wilde was. And obviously, and I said, Alex, George there Michael. You go. There's your...
George Michael.
Was he really? Mm. Right.
I go for it. There's been a lot of...
Yeah, but Oscar Wilde's the most famous one. And
You loved Wham.
Yeah, yeah. But there's his calling cards.
How could you say that?
Do you know what? And it's like... I was a bit young for that.
You enjoy what you do. That's the I do know it, but I'm just saying you're a romantic moment there.
But you know, that's and I see a lot of different
things. So don't talk to me about Oscar Wilde and say that he's more famous than George Michael.
He is.
He's your king.
Oscar Wilde's
no, got he's
pictures
not.
Up there.
No, George
Michael's over
you're
there. Oscar Wilde's
giving
over
it a
there.
Little bit of, I can't even say that, I was going to say gayness around the house.
Yeah. But
you can't say that. I don't. Yeah. When I shouldn't say that. You walk around camply. Yeah. And you
I wear the wife's nighties.
Who's more camp?
He said he wears his wife's nighties. And you're asking who's more camp?
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, do you know what? Seriously, Alex is kind of... Your plan is... You've done the things of that and you now want to kind of... You know, you want to be famous for the right reasons, really, don't you? Where it's going to bring your career and parts and films and movies and documentaries. So
this podcast is sponsored by Harry's. Harry's is way more than a super sharp razor company. They're here to revamp your whole routine, from close shaves and flake-free hair, all the way to clear, healthy skin. Harry's helps guys feel great. For this sponsorship, Harry's is offering a free travel-sized shower gel with a trial set to you, the viewers, to give you a chance to try their other products as well as shave. Please make sure to support this podcast and give your own shower shave a go by redeeming a free Harry's trial set. All you cover is £3.95 for delivery. Just head to harrys.com/Sean, S-H-A-U-N, to have your set delivered and start a shave plan. Your freebie will be added at checkout. That's harrys.com/Sean, S-H-A-U-N. Thank you for supporting Harry's. Link is in the description box below this video.
What in what respect? What do you
feeling
want
a bit down.
Do you?
Having a bit bad.
Do you really feel down?
No.
So no, so there you go.
Great. I'm having a bad day. I've got up, wrong side of the bed, just feeling a bit...
Well, everybody has a bad day.
No, but it's a really bad day.
Everyone has really bad days.
So what advice would you give then?
What's the question? Because that's too, everyone has a bad day.
Okay, so is it, I guess, genre? I'm feeling depressed at the moment and I don't want to get out of bed.
Right. Right. What's your purpose? Have you got? Do you know what your key purpose in life is? Have you got goals?
I'm lost.
There you go. I already asked you this. This is the one thing I asked.
I'm absolutely lost.
You need to
know. What would you advise?
You need to have purpose. What's your key?
What would you advise? Go write a dream board, or
that could help. Yeah. What's your key motivational things in life? What gets you fired up? What do you enjoy doing?
Are you still acting, or
I'm not acting at all. I'm deadly serious. What's the word I'm looking for?
Get up and go, I guess.
No, what's your
thing in life that makes you happy?
No. Core values.
Core values?
What are your core values?
Loyal. That's about it, really.
No, you need to think about it. Look, you're looking
at core values.
It's not. Think about what your core values are. What makes you angry?
Jen's a perfectionist.
But and then really go into it, break it down. That guy was a bit of an arsehole. That really upset me. It doesn't really matter. Mm. Yeah, but if something really matters,
rejection. Don't like that.
What's made you be a good person or to do something? What makes you get up? What's your core value? I need to do that. It's not a question, I want to do that. Sometimes in life, you do the things that you have to do.
I don't
need to do it. Whatever. I'd like to play the guitar. No, I have to play the guitar. That's what your core value is. Find out what that is. When you find that out, then you can find out what your purpose is.
With Alex, he's had a lot of experience in training. So that causes natural endorphin. So there's lots of... The diet makes you feel better. So for what... And obviously...
Well, you know about training because it's your new drug, isn't it?
And to be honest...
It's always been my drug training. Especially since I stopped the drugs.
He would know better than most what it's like when everyone in the country hates you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it's... You know, because listen, we've spoken... You've this has been in the paper and you can't get out of bed and you thought, oh my God, everyone hates me. That must take some getting back up, and it's all because everyone has a false opinion of you.
It does. I, just to finish off on that, my last professional fight was in Bellator, which is a big show. I'd retired 2 years. It's like the one underneath the UFC. Fought at the O2 Arena, and the reason why I did that was to show everybody the real me, the real Alex Reed, and it was like, right, I'm really positive, I'm great, I'm going to go out with a bang, and... The press absolutely destroyed me.
Did they?
And I was defeated before I even got into that cage.
And you lost?
I lost on decision, yeah. I got stopped by security out of the arena when I was supposed to be fighting, or calling my name to fight in the arena. I was having a fight with the security guards. Mm. I had a fight for 5 minutes with security. I'm on that fucking guard. That's my name. Oh, hold on a minute. And they rushed me in. I was so angry. And I was like, yeah, anyway, I lost.
I was going to ask what your core values and purpose is.
I feel, because a lot of people helped me when I got out of prison, and I was at a low. That was my low when I got out of prison, on the dole, at my parents' house, depressed. Can't get a job, criminal record, doles telling me to lie to the prospective employees and tell them I don't have a criminal record, and all the mental health team are on my case trying to section me. And a lot of people helped me get my life back on track, and now we've built this platform up. And it's my responsibility for other guys who've been in prison to get their stories out, help them get back on track. It's cathartic telling your story. Mm-hmm. Plus, we've got this platform whereby they come on now and all kinds of opportunities open up for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you reach out to people as well and all that? And
constantly, I mean, yeah.
No one sees this part of Sean Atwood, though, do they?
What part do they see? My hairy back?
No. But they don't see that part of... Do you know, it's like...
The sensitive side.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also loads of my books support registered charity, but I get judged because I write about bad guys. It might support the Bradley Lowry Foundation and all these kind of Frankie Lee Boo Fund, Vienna's Voice, but the bad guys. So, how can you do it? And it's like, listen, it's not my fault. I wasn't even alive when he did. Well, it's part of social history, but people have that opinion of you and people have the opinion of you. But hang on a minute, Deshaun doesn't actually... So you do more than what just the camera sees?
Well, Jen comes to the school, talks with me, and she's seen the reaction. Yeah. We were just at one last week, weren't we?
Really positive.
So good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it's all that. It's restoring my karma. I harmed society by importing drugs into America and doing yoga. I'm restoring my karma by...
Do you still feel guilty about that?
Preventing people? I feel guilty for the harm I caused society and also the harm I caused my loved ones, especially my mum. And, you know, my mum had a nervous breakdown of my situation. She flew 5,000 miles to visit me in jail. She's outdoors waiting to get in the desert for hours on end, sniffer dogs, searches, you know, the like out there, and the cowboy prison guards. And you go out to the visit and your mum's sat there hunched over a table and she's thinking, oh, and you see the effect, you know, what you've done to your own mum. Mm. Not good.
So what about yours?
What do you mean?
Core values and purpose.
Do you know what? I've probably been... Well, I've...
It's really quite interesting, this.
Do you know what? I've done 19 books.
And might you find your happiness?
In 4 years of the same week.
And you'll get up and get your...
And I've been in the middle of paper like 15 times in 4.5 years. So people are like, oh, I can't stand him and all that. But my goal in life is to be... to put the Amazon rainforest in danger. I want to write that many books. I'm going to pollute Great Britain and my fat face will be... I get so many trolls now. But do you know what it's like, and the ludicrous made-up stuff that gets said about me, where now I'm only learning, certainly last year, because my anxiety was so bad, and I'm only learning now to think, oh, it doesn't matter, it's fine, you're in the limelight, he's going to say this, he's going to say that, but I didn't at first, and...
Look how much time they're spending... obsessing on you.
Do you know something?
Do you not find flattering?
They actually love you in a warped way.
Do you know what? Seriously,
There's other things they could be doing, important things.
Yeah, you guys do what you do. You get paid. Essentially, it's a career. True Geordie, there's other podcasts, but there's people out there, Sean, they've got no job, but they're just YouTubers, 24 hours of them. And it's like, there was about five different accounts last night. This guy blocking me to tell me I'm having... It's alleged to have sex with Jack Russell's. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like...
He's probably sleeping on his mother's sofa and he wakes up with popcorn in his ass crack in the morning.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like...
You can't, like, get concerned about that level of people.
Yeah, but I did at first. But my aim is to be... Like, I've had times in my life, Sean, I've had addictions. 20 years ago, crack cocaine addict. Couple of years ago, broke my arm. Got addicted to codeine. So now...
No,
I'm addicted. And if I was, I wouldn't be saying, yeah, on camera. But you know what? Now my addiction now is work. It's to deal with nice people like yourself, Paul Suggett, Rob Brenton, people like him. That's my addiction.
And that's it, isn't it?
So I don't go out
and love is
fighting
what
in nightclubs and
not...
being in prison. Like, are you... Like, just stupid nonsense when I was young and immature with a chip on my shoulder. My addictions is...
What are you going to be
making
when you
people
grow
happy?
I'm going to have, the end of this year, I'm going to have 26 books out. And my plan is to do 100 books.
Wow, brilliant.
You set yourself a...
That's what my plan is. I'm 41 now. So I plan on doing...
You need to break a little bit. I mean, like...
No, well, that's
just you need to do it. You can't... You just can keep going.
Yeah.
Whatever, you've done that, though. Then what? You've done it.
Probably...
Then what?
Getting to cross-dressing or swinging or dogging or something. There's always advice in life that you've always got to do with, and you seriously... My advice at the minute is work. And anyone who follows me on social media, they'll see me 5 and I don't sleep. And if I have 5 hours sleep, I'm up again and I'm hyperactive.
But that makes you happy, yeah?
It does. This is what it does. I want to be...
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Honestly...
You're quite stressed.
Do you want a massage? Or
no, I'm not. I've had a lot to do this weekend. But you know what?
Do you get stressed, though? I mean, you're quite highly strung. Because you're always like, I know you're hungry to do it all.
Yeah.
Well, you've done it all, right? Now what? You can relax? Now what? You're going to do another 100 books?
Do you know what? When people get in touch with me and I think, Jesus, how do I know you even know who I am? But like, Ricky Gervais bought the Sykes books, Jamie Carragher... Robbie Williams, mental, some people who bought my books, and I'd be like, Tyson Fury, and it's like, how do you even, and then, do you know what, I think, yeah, I want to, and it's just a goal, it's just, I think, do you know what, I want to have blue plaques where I live, who has to come when I'm dead, do you know what I mean?
When you're dead. Okay.
But I hope no one grasses me up when I die.
I find it interesting.
How old were you when you started writing?
So I released my first book 5 years last week. So I was 36.
$20, congratulations.
And do you know, it's hard to do a book show. You know yourself, to have a book, and then you've got to, you know, you have to find a subject of interest. Like Kevin Costner said, if you build it, they will come. And then, so I've done it. Listen, I know I'm not a Alex Reid or a Sean. I've never had internet. But what I've done, Paul Sykes, Lee Duffy, Dominic Negus, Roy Shaw, I find these subjects that people probably would never have wanted to dream about writing. Take all the shit, yeah. But I find these subjects that people find fascinating. And, you know, I got involved by just watching Paul Sykes at Large 10 years ago. And I spent 3 years obsessing over the documentary. And I went, you know what, I'm going to do that. So I walked in the city of Wakefield, walked into the documentary, walked into the best-selling book, what Paul Sykes did, met all the characters, and it just brought me a career. And I've met all these kinds of different people, hence the reason people like that. So I went on a journey these last couple of years where I've sat and met people like Martin O'Neill, my absolute hero. And I've never, ever got... look at that. Martin O'Neill phoning me. I'd be proper starstruck. Do you know what I mean? And like, but yeah, it's just, I've just become an accidental author, but I've become addicted to work. So, you know, that's how,
I think
that's
the question,
what makes me happy.
I think the question I'm really asking is when we're on our deathbed or when we're dead and we're whatever you believe in, if you can indulge me, you're passing and you're looking back on your life and you're going to the next life. You're like, what was my life all about? Was I truly happy? Did I learn? All I was rushing to create this goal. Once I got the goal, then what? I don't know.
I'd look down and say, he's reading my book, Bootlegged Him. He hasn't paid for that. there's nothing else in my life, literally, than books, 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 books.
What about your kid and your mum?
Do you know what? That sounds really terrible, but sometimes I'm that busy, I don't even have time for my wife and my son. But do you know what? It's in years to come when I'm building this empire and I'm working 7 days a week and...
Work on it.
You know, last year I had 4 books at once. So I don't go out drinking now. So that's what I do, and I'm not that's hurting anyone. Yeah.
So I'm really intrigued because you seem like you're happy. Because you're like... Do what I want to do.
That's it, isn't it?
You don't need to do it, do you?
I used to have to get up.
Have you got, like, are you driven to have to do something if you don't do it?
What's my nickname?
The robot. He's under my phone as Robot Atwood because he's the robot. He don't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so you are driven.
Yeah.
You've got, So what happens if the mission changes?
So if Sean dies tomorrow, in his will and testament, the YouTube channel goes to me.
So, guys, this is what I'm asking, what I'm thinking about. I think about this a lot. I'm getting a bit deep here. Well, there's some serious shit going on in the world.
100%.
And if we were in Ukraine now, and you know, we're all really wealthy, we've achieved everything we want, and all of a sudden it's all lost, it's all gone. Then what? We have to start again. So, I mean, any time, at any moment in this universe, go upside down.
100%.
So, then what? I mean, what are you going to be? If all of your books go, I mean, you know, you've done it, you've got that self-worth. Self-worth is something great. You feel good about yourself, but all of a sudden, the actual physical things that you've created, gone.
Disappear.
I think what Jamie missed out, what he has created is friendships and bonds. And you've got all this hate in the world, but actually, that basis is love.
But, do you know what? I was interviewing somebody the week for a London book, Jack the Ripper, and he said to me, and it stuck on my head, he said, do you know what? He said, I could get stressed out about Russians and all. I said, but what can I do about it? And that's, he said, do you know what I do? I just deal with life and roll with the punches. And if you can't change nothing, then what's the point in being so stressed? Do you know what Paul Venner says? Yeah. He says, do you know what, Jamie? If you turn the news off, Russian's not happening. And I get it. I totally get it. But if that will lower your mood, Morrissey says it all the time, if it lower you, then isn't it better to just not watch it and do the Usher's trick?
Through COVID, my ex was watching Sky News. We'd get up in the morning at 9 o'clock and it would be on in the background all day till we started having our
indoctrination.
Like 7 o'clock.
at night. And I started feeling fucking depressed, watching all the shit go down, what's going on in the world. And it was back-to-back Sky News. And one day I woke up and I said, we're not fucking putting it on the TV today, because it was affecting me. Yeah, and I was feeling really fucking depressed. And then once we stopped watching it, listen to a bit of music, you find your mood automatically lifts. So, I don't know, maybe people should take an approach like that.
Jamie, he's not saying any of this to the camera, but behind the scenes, he's working very hard. People who've never got the stories out before, people who've never been heard of, he's raising their profile, he's putting books out about them, and this is changing their lives. This is taking them from
social
negative
history,
activity into positive, constructive activity, and they're able to make careers because you've created a brand for them.
Like Nick Manners today.
And he's creating brilliant friendships with these people. And that's love, isn't it?
That's
what you're going to look back on, I reckon. Not, I wrote all these books. You're going to say, look, I've got a family, I've built all these brilliant relationships, I've helped people change their lives, and karmically, that's going to be right in your heart.
Do you know what? The Alan Thompson book, right? I've paid for an evening with John Hartson and all these kind of different things. So when I sat with Alan Thompson for 20 hours, I used, this is serious, right? I used to have Alan Thompson posters on my bedroom. I watched him and was probably shouting at him. Like, and it's like, he's now what, Alan, if you're watching, he's walking, he's at a Palmore, he's walking around my house naked, and I'm thinking, I used to love him. But do you know what? It's like, listen, it's not always, it doesn't always end in a happy ending. You know, there's loads of people where I've met and thought, oh, never meet your heroes, and I wish I never knew that about you and all that, and, you know.
I was just saying that about someone I met, who I'm not going to say, he's rather famous and quite a big sportsman.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
And I had to think, hang on, I must forgive him, because that could have been...
Yeah.
You have this, you build someone up in your mind, and then they're not, they don't perform to what your expectation you built up in their mind.
Exactly. It's not their fault, it's just you've built it up.
And I'm like, oh, you're just a bit of an arsehole.
Yeah. But it is, it's,
and
you know...
As you get a bit older and you look at it, you think, oh, well, actually, maybe he's not.
I know the feeling. When I obviously was watching Sean on his YouTube channel, I thought, what a lovely guy. And then when I met him, I thought, what a fucking dick.
And then Alex, the work Alex does with young people, that he doesn't, you know, it's not saying to the camera, but behind the scenes.
Yeah. I'm just doing a book now, and the residents of Whitechapel, right? If you walk around Brick Lane, Whitechapel, you've got Jack the Clipper Barbers, Born in Blood was the motto. You've got Jack the Chipper Chip Shop, right? So the residents in Whitechapel are fuming. They're sick of these Jack the Ripper tourist people, making their area and all these people. But do you know what? At the same time, Birmingham, Peaky Blinders, Birmingham revels in this part of the social history. But if you go down Whitechapel and then Bethnal Green and the Crays and all this, the community doesn't buy into it. You know, I've spent a lot of time in London the last couple of years, and, you know, when you meet the people in the Bethnal Green Worker Men's Club, they despise, you know, but because it's cool and Tom Hardy plays him, and, you know, and it's a kind of socially accepted. Jack the Ripper, you can get away with it because it's 134 years ago, but when I went to Wakefield or Teesside to do the Duffy books, I'm Beelzebub. I am the demon. I am probably... Do you know what I mean? But it's, you know, a lot of people will buy the books and be interested in it, but they won't see it as okay, do you know what I mean? Because, but it's human nature, isn't it? It's true crime sells.
Would you say your families and friends are proud of you?
Do you know
and
what?
To each of you. But,
when I have, like, potter breakdowns, like, the wife says, Jamie, just go get a job in wherever, Stack and Shell, like I used to. And he says, this is the fame. The people are aware of you that you don't know them, and they have an opinion of you. So everyone in Middlesbrough has this opinion of me, and, you know, certain people make lies upon the internet. Oh, well, it must be true. You know, Winston Churchill said, you'll never reach your destination if you stop and bark at every dog that barks. So what I've learned in the last year is in every action is a reaction. So if I'm doing books and all these bad people who are nice, Jack the Ripper, you know, thankfully he's dead, so he's not going to sue me. But do you know what? It's like all these people quite recently what I've done. And I get it. I've met people. who've had teeth missing from Lee Duffy. I've met people who've been victims of Paul Sack, loads of people. So I get it. I totally get it. I'm not glamorising it, but, you know, I've been asked to do, like, sell mugs and T-shirts, and I've been like, no. I do books, I do documentaries, because it's educational, but I'm not I've been asked to do Lee Duffy T-shirts, and that, and I was like, no chance. Do you know what I mean? When people have went on to do them. So it's not for me, but I'm just a bit of a history geek, so I can buy into all the Whitechapel and John Merrick was here and the craze and Jack Spot Comer and all this, and so much history in Whitechapel and that, and I'd rather learn something than glamorise people. But like Nick Manners, the interview, you've done it today.
Again, he was just such a spiritual warrior. And
he's got a nice story and a happy ending in the end.
There was a kid there that he was training when we walked in, and another kid came in as we were leaving, wasn't it? And you could see, like, how he was transforming these kids' lives. Yeah. That's what it's all about, isn't it? If you're just raising everyone around you instead of focusing on the bullshit, trolls and all that.
Do you know what? Nick Manners, fair play, he's used boxing as a vehicle. And he's using it to change his life, and it changes his life. Yes, he didn't win. Although he won a title, you know, he didn't get massive fame in boxing. But he fought Joe Calzaghe, greatest ever. But, you know, if boxing done good for him today, he's still helping kids. He's part of the Josh Warrington team. And that, for Nick Manners, he is a success story. Yeah. Just as much as all these people winning British titles, because he walked away from boxing. Boxing's an unforgiving sport as well. You know, if you stick around one fight too many, your faculties will be punched to bits and... You know, and but you know what? He's not one of them people, and I've done the books on him, where they're beating 10 people up on every page, and you're just like, you know, I've interviewed people here in the past, and I thought, when they've gone, I've got my head's fucking busting with you. Absolute narcissistic assholes. Where Nick is, there's a story behind it. There will be with his, with like, listen, I've done this, Sam. No, it's not clever. Learn from my mistakes. Paul Venice, he's a massive... massive inspiration to people out there, because do you know what? He did do the bad things, but he managed, by the grace of God, to hang and not, you know, and he's turned his life around and he's making a difference.
Yeah, Nick Manners went through some brutal things, but you can see how at peace he is with himself now.
Yeah.
And you can see that's from just the work he's doing.
Well, years ago, you wouldn't have met that nice Nick Manners. He was, you know, to knock Paul Sykes out is, I mean, that just...
Oh, that story was amazing. Yeah,
you know, I mean, that you know.
There's Sykes there, Jen, behind you. Imagine him coming at Nick Manners looking like that, 6.5 foot tall.
6'3.5".
6'3".
This guy was the scariest thing in Northern England. Films, documentaries going up on him. And you know, this, I mean, you've seen the documentary. So when Nick done that, that was only 2 years after. Obviously, Sykes declined and he slept rough. But this was not far off when he was probably at his most scariest. And, you know, Nick's told you the story, but he only reacted like that because he was pushed into a corner in his fight or flight. And obviously he knocked Paul Sykes out and then thought, shit, I've just knocked him out. What's going to happen when he wakes up? So then that's what he's, you know, and it's like, he's going to, you know, this is not a normal person. It's Paul Sykes.
He said he put him under the shower, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen's only just heard about Sykes.
If you want to watch your documentary.
What's your craziest Sykesy story for Jen?
Well, do you know what? Oh, I've got loads.
Something with a dog.
Well, one story, and it was not far off from the documentary. So the police, Wakefield police, got a phone call and said, look, can you come out? Paul Sykes is in my house. And then, what's he doing? So she's ran out, frantic, saying, look, come quickly. So Paul, and she's talking to him and she's like, look, so what's he doing? He's like, well, he sat down and he's eating my husband's tea. And what's your husband doing? Just sat looking at him. So this is this Paul Sykes. He's like a caveman. And Neanderthal just discovered fire. Walking in this house and just sits down eating the tea. So you're not going to... Hang on a minute. You're not going to... This is the most dangerous, unpredictable man in the 70s and the 80s. He was hell on wheels. And he just basically walked in his house and said, I'm going to eat your husband's tea. And then that was that. And the police, you know, but they used to do things like that all the time.
Well, just walk in and help himself to the people's dinner.
He got 9 months once. And the reason being was he walked into this woman's house, and she was a probation office, and the charge was burgling or breaking an entrance. But he walked into the house and went, "You can fucking tear that thing off." Didn't know her, so he just walked into this house where the woman was hoovering, and he saw him. So he would randomly just walk into these people's houses
and just turn a hoover off, help himself to food.
Do you know, there's another story that, do you know, I mean, Paul's sister, she, we were going to do the book, and she, you know, it just basically got too much for her. Bad memories. And I put, look, fine, I understand. And, you know, I deleted all the pictures what she'd give me. But so she, Paul used to just walk in people's houses. So Paul's niece, who was Paul's sister's daughter, said, I woke up 1 minute and I just seen my uncle Paul sat in the chair drinking a can of beer, singing The Bare Necessities of Life from the Jungle Book. So she's like, you know, she just found this big lump sat drinking a can of beer, singing Bare Necessities of Life.
Bare Necessities.
Yeah.
Oh, Bare Necessities.
Yeah, you know, Peter Fury and Johnny Nelson, boxers, they said, when people wouldn't even look at Paul Sykes sideways, he was a scary man. And do you know what? The kids who set fire to him, pissed on him, smashed eggs on a daily basis. Johnny Nelson said to me, them kids would never have had any inkling who once upon a time that man was. Because by then he was just a shell of himself. And all the kids used to, many of them used to go and beat him up and think, oh, I've just beat Paul Sykes up there. You didn't. What you've done is just beat someone up who used to be Paul Sykes. So it's very sad. And I was talking to the guy who's going to play Paul Sykes, very, very well-known actor. And he said, you know what? To play the part of Paul Sykes, that's what gets it, the social justice side of it. Life, you were so bad, and then all of a sudden, life come back round. So all them people whose dads you beat up and granddads has come back and beat you on the ass. But, you know, whether he is now up there, down there, he'll be judged. But, you know, I totally understand. When that Paul Sykes thing happens, it will be huge. Like Leicester Square, film, documentary. And he's just an unbelievable one of character. But, you know, many people, when you see him, you think Keith Lemon. You think that's not, but it was a true story. Everything about that guy. In fact, the more you dig into the Paul Sykes story, the more wackier and what one story. What Sykes used to do at the end of his life was, he used to go into shops and get cans of beer and just walk out and kebabs. So this kebab shop, so he walked out this kebab shop before in the police. So they found him in the Wakefield cemetery in a grave, and he's eating a kebab, cans of lager, and the police have jumped down. And they're trying to snatch your stuff off, and they're in this grave, and it's crazy. But it was just the life, wacky life of Paul Sykes, and he was very much real. He lived by his own rules, and eventually that's what killed him at the end of his... Very, very sad, because at the end of his deathbed, Delroy Showers went and seen him, and his wife, Kath, and he actually said... Before he died, he slipped into a coma for 6 days and never recovered. But one of his last words was, "The drink's killed me, hasn't it? It's got me." So he knew. And
was he drugs or just drink?
Both. Obviously, he was a raging alcoholic. He was a functional alcoholic from last 25 years of his life. But he was into everything drugs-wise and all that. But, you know, I interviewed one guy, and he said, I was with Paul Sykes. He was having his beers, and I'm sat with him, and this is, you know, this guy's getting paranoid. And all of a sudden, Paul Sykes started taking acid, and he thought, "Where am I going to get out?" Unbelievable story. But you know what? Seriously, that's what got me into it as an author, Sean. And you know, when I'd done that book, I didn't even know if I was any good. I just thought, I'm going to write this book, you know, see what happens. Interviewed a few famous people, Charles Bronson, Eddie Richardson, all different people. But I was addicted to writing this book, and when I'd done it, I stopped and thought, what can I do now?
I was going to ask, where did you get your information from?
Just digging deep, and you know, I mean, the first book I'd done interviewed his two of his sons, went into prison to see them because two of his sons are doing life. And I just interviewed lots of different people, Lups at the State, the boxing, people who knew him as a childhood friend, people who knew him at the end of his life when he was going to church just for tea and biscuits. So it was all very sad, but it's just a really tragic, harrowing tale about a man who could have had everything and died in the gutter. And,
how old was he when he died?
He was 60. But, I mean, that picture, one of the first images, if you Google Paul Sykes, he's like that. The jazz hands, he's got about 8 quarts on beard. So that was 2.5 years before he died. And when you look at that picture, you think it's impossible to fall harder in society. And he did get to the point where he could hardly walk, couldn't open his beer because his hands were full of arthritis. The kids were hunting him in packs on a daily basis in Wakefield.
Well, man had a similar trajectory, but he died in his late 40s. He could hardly walk and he was, yeah. And it was alcohol, same. Yeah. Every day drinking loads of alcohol.
Well, that's on Paul Sykes' death certificate, it says pneumonia and cirrhosis of the liver, which was drink. Which was just cheap cider. And he would drink anything. And, you know, he never... Alcohol is really what done him in.
Mm.
They say it's the number one drug.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you come to learn about Paul Sykes?
Through Jamie.
Publishing
his audiobooks and listening to him and just getting gripped by the stories.
What were you when you first heard him?
I was just giggling my head off when I was... This, everywhere he went... Like, you've just... What Jamie told you, there's a minuscule fraction of what's in these books. But everywhere he goes...
There's a story.
It's just a madness, like what we heard with Nick Manners said.
I mean, do you know what? Paul Sykes used to fall asleep on the helipad in Wakefield just to wind the... Because he was in Wakefield every day. People were always beating him up. Once upon a time, he was sending him a lot of unpaid overtime because obviously everyone, you know... If there was one thing the Wakefield bouncers didn't want to hear was Paul Sykes out in town. So he was beating all the people up in his pram. And at the end of his life, when he was getting beaten up, you know, he got his arm broke by a young kid I won't name. Was probably 40 years his junior. And that was because, you know, and the police would say to Paul, do you want to make a statement? And he said, no, I don't. He said, I know why it happened because of the way I was. And towards the end of his life, he got his jaw broke. And listen, life swings in roundabouts. And if you're going to be a total bastard all your life, the chances are life, God's going to get you back at some point. But it is a really strong story. And to how he died, you know, no one deserved the ending he got. If he'd done any wrong in his life, believe me, I'm not exaggerating, he was paid back 1,000 times. Because he was hunted like a pack animal. He was just, you know, it was all because once upon a time he used to be this unbelievable guy who the newspaper would cover and his documentary and his book and all this, and he was fighting for the British and the Commonwealth title, and, you know, in the blink of an eye, he was a nobody.
That's interesting.
Mm.
Had you heard of him, Alex? No, not myself. Can't wait to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So what's your plans while you're up here, Alex?
Well, they've changed slightly. Yes.
So he was going to be coming up for the Paul Venice, Danny Christie fight.
It's an autism charity and having been diagnosed with autism recently, I'd like to support it. I like Paul, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And he's got an autistic child.
Yeah.
And autism, there's a scale, and she's a bit more extreme. Yeah, I'm functioning.
Yeah.
And so I understand we want to raise some money and some awareness for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just slightly postponed, and obviously you guys will probably come and film it in a couple of weeks. You're going
to
be...
I'm actually in the... I'm in pre-production for a reality TV show.
Mm.
And one of the things we're going to do is covering how to get yourself back up off the ground.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, after that, the world is the oyster. I want to, you know...
See where things go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, where are you now?
Right, oh, where am I? I see what you
inside
mean.
Your head.
Mm.
A lot better than you were last year.
I ask all of you, because I'm fascinated, what drives you? I think about a lot about, as you get older, you think about, we're closer to passing than we are when we were born. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think, what's
speak
like?
Speak for yourself.
What's the rest of give it a few more years. Yeah. Another 10 years. Good another 10. You're like, well, what's my life all about? What am I here for? You know, what's going to make me happy and content? Yeah. And I could see how passionate you are about your books, and you're passionate, you both are, about your different projects. You're doing what you're doing now, going around the country.
I've had real good fun as well. It's different.
What gets you drive?
We're asking you this now. You've already asked us.
I'm learning. I'm trying to understand.
Do you know, I'm just going with the flow for the next year or two, and just taking in every and any opportunity within reason, not only fans or any
tomorrow's
crap like that.
Promised, is it?
And just seeing what happens. And I'm happy at the moment. The moment I feel unhappy, I'll change it. But for now, I feel fucking amazing. So
it's exciting showing up and meeting someone you've never met before and hearing their life story.
It's great.
It's great.
And then maybe if it gets to the point it doesn't suit my life, I'll change it.
Do you? And you asked me a question. I'm almost reversing it. Do you like pick up tips to try and work out what you're all about?
Yeah. I'm looking at my strengths and weaknesses.
That's what I do. Yeah. It's like, can I? I was on Brian Rose's show, London Real, not many years ago, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago. And he is very similar. He interviews all these amazing, interesting people. And you see how he's developed that, and it's really become him. Or he's picking up the best of everything. He's got a bit of Bruce Lee, taking what's useful and got rid of the rest.
Yeah.
I find that interesting. I'm interested in people myself. That's why I'm here now. Mm-hmm. You know, interested in why? What makes us tick?
So what do you want from life?
Peace.
Peace.
I still don't have peace. I'm getting there. It's a work in progress. I have a beautiful little girl. But I still don't have peace because I have the fear, as any parent does, to provide. Mm. I mean, it's about, I need to get out there and I need to work. And to bring in something called money, which is, I don't want to ever be a slave to that. I believe in the law of attraction, and it's about having that happiness now. And it's not about faking it till you make it. You really got to believe right now that you have it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you've also got to practice gratitude.
Well, 100%.
Yeah.
And I look at my little girl and I have such gratitude. So that's good. And I relax. I know it's all going to be great. No, it is great.
You're already there.
There is a juxtapose, because every now and again, the doubt comes in. Oh, hang on a minute. Everybody who has ever accomplished anything great, they're like, oh, can I do this? Mm. I don't believe anybody who says, I had no doubt, whatever. I'm sure they had a doubt. You're just about to run, you know, you're going to jump a ravine. Oh, hang on a minute. Whoop. You know that one where you've tried to jump somewhere and just before you get to the edge, it's a bit like that, you know. And you've got to believe in yourself, because if you don't, you're going to fall.
Yeah.
But there's like a tension in you, isn't there?
Yes.
And what's the root cause of that?
Psychology, Sean.
Failure.
It's what?
Failure.
Fear of failure.
Failure.
Well, that's because you're just setting a high standard on yourself, isn't it? It's self-inflicted, so you're creating that tension.
But this is the thing, right? I mean, what makes you truly happy? I mean, people who succeed in life, they are a bit crazy. They become obsessed. They become obsessed, and I'm like, but. I was on a trip because you said something that made me think you weren't, because you were just happy. Mm. I'm like, hold on a minute, maybe do you need, I mean, if you just stop tomorrow, like for instance, if some sort of dramatic instance happens on the planet and you just had to live in
collateral.
A... No, that's not the word.
Well, I did that for 6 years, and I just did yoga all the time and read.
And you're happy?
I was happy to an extent. I was happy as I could be under those circumstances.
Right, here goes. What makes you unhappy?
You've got to make the most of every situation, I believe. We're all running out of time. We're all running out of time.
I spent 4 weeks in Plentiful Prison last year, and I was happy. Yeah. What the hell?
You said in the interview.
Because you detached. What the hell? You were detached from all the pressures.
I had focus. I was like, God give me the wisdom to, basically the serenity prayer. I had limited things I could control, so I just controlled what I could, and I was happy.
And you had limited material possessions and the stress that comes with those.
No rent, no bills.
4 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't want to do any more.
No.
I don't want to
especially
do
now you've got your daughter.
100%. I mean, she is just, But there is, there's nothing ever going to be certain. There's only thing, one thing we can all be certain of. None of us are going to get out of here alive. Mm-hmm. We're all going to die someday. But, I mean, like, that's why I really think about it now. I think about death a lot.
What do you think certain in life is death and taxes?
Yeah.
So anxiety makes us perform.
But will there be taxes, though, if we have no money?
Well, if we're going to,
if we're talking about like we're with no money and we'd be happy, I'm like the new world, the conspiracy theories, right?
If we go all live on it,
but maybe that, maybe there is some in that though. If we don't have any money, sorry,
anxiety makes us perform, stimulates us to do what is necessary to make the money or whatever we need. But do you think you have an excess anxiety above what is normal to make us do the normal activity? Do you think you're putting too much pressure on yourself?
I don't. I think I chastise myself being lazy.
What's your definition of being lazy?
Beat myself up. Hang on, I could do more of this. I could do more. What am I doing? I'm get up and do more. Come on, stop being a bum. And you're like, you need time out. That's why I was saying to you, you've got to relax a little.
But you know what?
Yeah.
Do you know what, right? I used to be all the jobs I've ever done, right? And my hobbies, releases, used to be football, boxing, true crime. So now, for what I get paid to do, I used to do. So I actually don't have a job anymore. So that's the thing why I can't cut off. Because what I'd get paid for now, I used to do for free. So that's all. I'm a million mile an hour, and I've got the anxiety and all. Like,
but when your passion becomes your job, I do hear that. Do something you love. It does actually take away the passion a bit. Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? Find something you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. But you said
you've still got to work bloody hard,
though. What's lazy, right? You epitomise that a little bit, in my opinion, because you've got these huge Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you don't make anything of them. Where I succeed because I mean, another podcaster said to me a couple of years back, you're the first thing I see in the morning and the last thing I see at night. John Blake's
romantic.
And I'm chucking. Sorry?
Romantic.
Yeah, no, but it's true because it's no one's going to do it for me. I'm not going to, no labourers are going to come and help me. It's all me and it's all stuff I would do for free anyway. So I'm like, do you know what I mean? And that's why I want to make this. This COVID has killed my business for the last 2 years.
Oh, a lot of people's.
Yeah.
It's back on track. No more negativity. Come on.
There's 300 water stores in Great Britain and they've all stopped buying in bulk. So that's, you know, if I was a millionaire, what could I do about it? I can't do nothing about it.
So when you came and first met me in Wild Man.
Yeah.
Your attention was high, wasn't it?
Yeah, really
but
bad.
Now, look at you today. Oh,
I'm not,
it's down,
the first
isn't it?
Time you've seen him since then.
No, we speak a lot.
No, yeah. But seeing in person.
We've done a few podcasts. We're always doing podcasts.
Yeah. Enjoy
he's bringing guests.
Come in, Sean's.
But what? My question is, how have you got to where you are now from when we first met you? Because you seem really relaxed versus.
It was the doctor said what it was. So I had anxiety. I looked like I was on drugs all the time. But it was from not taking a day off because it was my hobby. And basically, my nervous system started developing all these tics. That's what it was. So I've obviously tried a different oil and said, no, I'm not going to mention because we're not allowed. But I'm not quite there yet, but I need to be. But that how I got that bad was a million mile an hour. And then all of a sudden, everyone knew who I was. Everyone's got an opinion of this guy. I was in Wakefield, people come to talk to me, Leeds, and like And everyone had an opinion of me. Oh, you're the bastard who done them books and all that. And but that's how some people...
Do you believe there's actually a there? Because you know you just said, I'm not quite there yet. And Alex has said something similar this evening. I think, don't you find that your whole life is a work in progress?
No, I just meant or on, there's going to be my...
And we pressure ourselves to think that it's not.
To think that you're going to reach this end goal.
There's this ideal,
like,
isn't it, that we never
achieve. Oh, my God, I'm 100% happy for the rest of my life. I don't think it works.
I've got a plan where, I mean, like I said, 100 books, but... they're going to get to the point when people mention Arthur in the North East, they'll think of one guy. And it'll be because I've done fuckloads of books, not because I'm, everything I do, I work hard at it. I don't want nothing given on a plate.
Do you put the dictaphone down?
And that's how I did for 4 years. I had a book finished before I had my book out, and it was a conveyor belt of just craziness, and got addicted to painkillers and... it was my drug. It was like...
I've got a drug. It's called food. It's been going a while now. I was told I'm getting taken out. And then you told me we're going to be half an hour. It's been about 2 hours. Yeah. I need some food, mate.
Where's the... Where's the thing?
I'm not going to have you break it down the rain for us to make your books. Got to save this planet.
I'll just find somewhere else to write.
Recycled paper.
Yeah.
Final question for Jamie then, if we're wrapping it up. Who do you think's more handsome, Tommy from Peaky Blinders or Alex Reed?
Do you know what? Serious, I've only started watching Peaky Blinders this week, and I've been like, what the fuck have I been missing all these years?
I know, I've just started like last month.
So I'm falling away, right? And do you know what? If I was gay, Alex is a good looking guy. But you know what? That Peaky Blinders, I mean...
Are you the bat or the catcher?
No, but you know what? He's that Peaky Blinder, I understand why the women have a lot of... have something for him.
Squeeze it.
But I'd probably have to say I'm an Alex Reed man.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
What about you, Sean?
Alex Reed all the way. Love at first sight.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for watching this. All the links will be in the description box. Please go and subscribe to Alex Reed's YouTube channel. He's promised us he's going to start posting way more content. We're going to go out on the town and get all frisky, and that'll be there. We'll be doing live streams from the bars, doing all kinds of...
Shots.
And Jamie, War Cry Publishing as well. All the links to the books will be down there. The audiobooks will blow your mind. I just got totally... the world of Lee Duffy, the world of Paul Sykes. My life's never been the same.
As I said, there's loads of more coming. Unless I get shot or piano falls on me or I get struck by lightning, I'm flooding Great Britain. That's my plan next couple of years.
And Jen is flooding Great Britain with organic cotton clothing. Boomer and Jen.
Clothing. It's very nice. Mm. It is.
Good,
I'm not saying that. It generally is.
Yeah, do you still wear it?
I like it. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I really like it.
Good. Oh, thank you. Yeah, get along.
And as you know, we're all about love, and we end these things with hugs, so...
You first. Right, come in.
Oh, we've got poop in my face. I don't want that in my face.
Oh, thanks very much, man. It was a great pleasure. Cheers. This podcast is sponsored by Gadfly Press. We are proud to announce the publication of Britain's number one art forger, Max Brandert, The Life of a Cheeky Faker. And from the back cover blurb, Max the Forger is an artist and gentleman whose colourful lifestyle has spanned over 70 years. He has lived under the strict regime of Bernardo's Children's Homes, been an elephant handler in the circus, lived rough, busked his way from Brighton to Bombay, sold his fakes up and down the country, dined with dukes, socialised with celebrities, associated with gangsters, served time in prison, and donated tens of thousands to charity. And through it all, he has never stopped smiling and loving life and missing his mum. Quote from the book. Mr. Brandert, I do not see you as a malicious criminal, sighed the judge. But why, oh why, do you continue to use your God-given talent in this way? I just can't help myself, Your Honour. It's like an addiction, I grinned. Available worldwide on Amazon. Link in the description box below this video. Thank you for supporting our sponsor.
Here at Boomer and Jen, we offer a wide range of organic or recycled clothing. We all know our planet is important. We only have this one. So it's vital that we all work together to slow down and reverse the changes to the environment. Whilst we all know that big industry are having a significant effect on pollution, here at Boomer and Jen, we believe that if we all make small changes, we can do our part. Fast fashion causes detrimental effects to the planet. Not only is nearly 20% of global wastewater produced by the fast fashion industry, but there is a considerable amount of fast fashion ending up in landfill. So let's move away from fast fashion items that are only worn once or twice and start wearing extremely comfortable, durable and environmentally friendly clothing and ethical jewellery. Boomer and Jen was founded in a quiet town in Devon in 2018. It has now gone from strength to strength as the world is becoming more aware of the current climate situation, helping our customers to buy sustainable, quality clothing. All of our products are fair trade and registered with the Global Organic Textiles Standard Association. Check us out on organiccottonclothing.co.uk.